Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
A bill that would mandate teaching the Holocaust sits on Governor Baker's desk, waiting his signature. The legislation would require middle and high school students to learn about the Holocaust and about genocide. State Senator Michael Rodriguez, chair of the Senate Ways and Means Committee and sponsor of the Senate version of the bill, says such teaching is crucial for our future.
There's still so much hate in this world and so much misinformation, and it was just important that we teach the younger generation about the genocides that have happened and occurred over the years, hopefully to prevent them from ever happening again.
Now, while the governor hasn't signed the bill, he has signaled his intention to do so. So let's look at what led to the bill and what could change in our schools as a result. Join the conversation. Do you want Governor Baker to sign the bill? Should the state mandate such teaching? Do you wish you'd learned more about genocide, human rights, when you were in school? 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also tweet us at Radio Boston. Joining us now, Nima Avashia, who is an eighth grade history and civics teacher in the Boston Public Schools, and Chris Moriello, head of the Center for Holocaust and Genocide Studies at Salem State University. Nima, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
And Chris, welcome to you. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So, Chris, I'm actually going to start with you. This bill would mandate education on the Holocaust and genocide in all of middle and high schools. This seems late, is it?
Well, Massachusetts is a bit late. I think it's around 19 other states have similar mandates for Holocaust and genocide education. However, it's essential that we begin the process of making this curriculum available to all of our students. And as I've said to others, the Holocaust and Genocide Education Bill is not merely about commemoration or memory or never forget. It is actually essential to civic education and to our democracy. So I agree with the representative that the hate that is happening in our society is not only historical, but it's also contemporary.
Chris, you used the word essential twice in that answer. Why is this mandate essential?
Well, the mandate is essential because the curriculum is crowded with a lot of material to cover. And I'm speaking specifically about a social studies curriculum. By this bill being front and center, it provides our teachers and our curriculum directors with an opportunity to integrate human rights into the curriculum in the middle and high school. And human rights education is just central to understanding not only, again, what happened in the past in terms of comparative genocide, slavery, atrocities in the past, but I think it's a conversation that many students want to have and many teachers need for have with their students for a framework for this discussion. And I think moving forward, that is what's essential. This provides a framework for understanding themes that our students and our teachers need and want to talk about.
Nima, you teach eighth grade. Are you talking about genocide, about human rights now? I don't mean now, this week. I mean now before this mandate.
So I think we definitely talk about the genocides that have happened on our own continent when it comes to the genocide of indigenous people, when it comes to racial terror lynchings that happened to African Americans in the last 400 years. Like, we talk about those ideas in the context of the class that I teach. I would say those aren't things that are explicit in the standards for my course. Those are things that I, as a teacher, kind of think are important and thinking about how to work in. When you think about the actual standards for history and social studies in Massachusetts, it's a 217-page document for K-12 history standards, and the word genocide appears 9 times. The word Holocaust appears 9 times. Both of those words are only appearing in the standards for World History II and U.S. History II, which students take in their later years of high school. So as it currently stands, there is not, prior to 10th or 11th grade, there's no space in the standards that's really clearly stating that this is content that young people should be learning about and grappling with in their classes.
And do you feel young people you teach are at a stage of maturity where they're ready to be learning about it and grappling with it, Nima?
Yeah, 100%. I think adolescents want to understand what is unjust about the world and want to understand what to do about it. I think a lot of the time we are you know, we're more scared to have those conversations with them, but like they're actually very ready. And the reality is they're seeing everything. Social media makes it so that young people are seeing everything. So if we don't give them ways to make meaning of what they're seeing, we're actually doing them a disservice. I think about like the spike in sort of anti-Semitic language that we've seen and that we've seen reported on. And it's like, that's coming from somewhere. Young people are learning those things. They're acquiring that information, right? But are we actually making space in school to make sure they have the right understanding to make meaning of those things when they see them? Or are they just sort of acquiring and accumulating symbols and language without having the history to understand the implications of what is being presented to them?
So there's a lot there that I'd like to unpack. I do want to add a couple caller voices, 800-423-8255, to join this conversation. Megan is on the line in Watertown. Go ahead, Megan.
Hi, I think this is really important because it provides students with a foundation that they can use to combat a lot of the misinformation that is out and about today on these that are so prevalent still in our society.
Thank you for that call, Megan. I'd like to go to Todd, too, in Holden. Todd, go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. So my family has distant relatives, grandparents that were lost in the Holocaust. And I learned about it as a kid just because of that. So I've known about it my whole life. I would say majority of people are nowhere near educated about it as they should be. And when I heard that teacher say that it's not part of her curriculum, but she does it anyways, I think that's, first of all, wonderful. I think we need more teachers to kind of not buck the system, but at least teach what we feel is necessary for our kids to know. So, having said that, it is totally essential to make it part of the curriculum. So people have, teachers have to teach it. And there has to be real concrete discussions about it. I think
Thanks,
we
Todd.
Even need to go deeper into slavery.
Thank you, Todd. I appreciate it. So, Chris, I'm going to turn back to you here. Listening to Todd, listening to Nima, I'm thinking of an English teacher I had in high school who used to always say that structure breeds freedom. And I wonder if you can talk about, if the governor signs this mandate, what does it allow, right? We tend to think of mandates as what does it require, but also what does it allow teachers to do? Maybe you can talk a little bit about both of those things.
Good. Idea of what it allows teachers. What it allows teachers to do is in a structured way is to develop students' understanding of issues of democracy that get corrupted or destroyed prior to any mass atrocity, many type of genocide. So what it does is I think it sets up an opportunity for teachers to weave into the middle and high school curriculum some major themes of democracy, of othering, of racism and prejudice, which of course were at the root of mass atrocities such as the Holocaust or the Armenian genocide. So for me, I see it as an opportunity for teachers to really think through how can we interweave this in the curriculum so we're not just pulling out disparate moments in the past, but we are talking about themes of civics and democracy that are essential for having these kind of grounded conversations. And I, you know, wholly agree with the idea that students are ready to talk about this, whether they're getting the information from somewhere else, they're bringing it into our classrooms and they're talking about it. If they have a structure to understand it, then I think it's a lot more productive conversation. And I think everyone will be more comfortable in having those conversations.
So let's stay on that thread. And Nima, I'm going to play some sound for you. We spoke with Jeremy Burns about this. He is the executive director of the Jewish Community Relations Council of Greater Boston. There had been criticism of this bill that you don't need to mandate something if it's already being talked about in schools. He responded to the criticism by pointing to what happened with the football team at Duxbury High School when they used anti-Semitic play calls during their games.
This is a community that has had a Holocaust and genocide education component in its curriculum, but it wasn't mandatory and not every student learned it. And not every student appreciated it, and clearly it was not part of the culture of the school for many, many years. And that has to change.
It makes me think of both what Chris was just saying and your comment earlier, Nima, about young people are being exposed, Do they know what to do with it? Do they know what they're encountering? Do they understand that history? Are they culturally prepared to address it? What can happen? What will happen in your classroom now, Nima, if this mandate is signed to help students grapple with that?
I think that what has to happen is it can't be that we add another 15 pages to the 217-page document. I think what we have to do is get really clear about the sort of like core understandings that we want young people to have over the course of their K-12 education. And one of those really core understandings is like what happens when we dehumanize people and what happens when we dehumanize them in the United States, what happens when they've been dehumanized in Germany, what happens when they're dehumanized during the Armenian genocide. Like that core theme is something that I think young people can actually start talking about and thinking about when they're quite young. You don't have to get into the details of genocide with a very small kid for them to understand what it means when we stop treating people like they're human beings. Young people see that happen all the time. And so I think for me, what it could allow, or if we let it, is for us to clarify sort of what are the most important things that we really believe young people need to walk away from our education system with, and how do we pare down, and how do we make sure that the things that are most important to us are the things that we are coming back to again and again over a young person's education. So I think it's an opportunity to clarify and call if we use it as such. I think if we just tack on an addendum to the standards and say, do this too, I think that will have missed the point.
1-800-423-8255 to join this conversation. So, Chris, first to you, you met with school officials in Duxbury after the anti-Semitism was documented. Will this kind of mandate, will the teaching that will happen in classrooms, does it stop a future incident like Duxbury?
Well, just to clarify, I didn't meet with school officials, but I was part of a workshop that was sponsored by the Lappin Foundation at Duxbury High School with a group of students who engaged this topic of the Holocaust and Holocaust education and then visited the museum in Washington, D.C. So what I learned from that conversation is that, you know, the students that I was talking to were clearly really engaged on this issue, had studied it in detail. And what the Duxbury incident with the football team, what it showed them is that their community and their school was not approaching this topic in a serious enough way. And they wanted to draw attention to that. And I was amazed and really impressed with the students' ability to handle the concepts. These were high school students, handled the concepts of comparative genocide studies and some of the themes that we talked about with the students. Yes, dehumanization, but it's also the concept of the breakdown of democracy. Before genocides and mass atrocities is this sense of a breakdown of social order where some people do not have recourse to the law, where the state becomes an oppressor, and when the governmental system breaks down and the party system breaks down. It's not that long ago, we can think about it in our own country and, you know, just this year, of a moment in which the breakdown of order, and we saw it firsthand. So to me, it is the Duxbury students were impressive because they wanted to take control of the situation. They wanted to have input into the situation. And I was really impressed that they were able to have this workshop. Whether it makes a difference, that's a community decision. And I think this genocide bill really does give teachers a set of resources and tools and understandings and hopefully some professional development that they can bring this into their curriculum from K through 12. So students, all students can have this conversation as good as the one that I had in Duxbury.
So Nima, one of the things that's echoing in the back of my mind is concerns from parents that there are so many boxes that have to be checked in curriculum as it is, so many things that have to be taught, and they have to be taught in a certain way so that there's an assessment test, so that there's performance against standardized tests like the MCAS, for example. Talk about adding another requirement into the curricular mix here, how you react to that as a teacher, what you think those trade-offs are. And I guess I also wonder whether this is a subject that can be parsed out in that way.
So, I mean, I think that actually that is the thing I've been thinking about the most, which is the way in which 20 years of high stakes testing has resulted in a narrowing of our curriculum so that this isn't content that young people are getting in the same way that they were previously. When I first started teaching 20 years ago, like young people were reading books like Number of the Stars and night in school. And some people still are, but lots aren't, right? Because standardized testing has pushed people to move to reading one-off articles to be able to find the main idea and the supporting details, as opposed to really engaging deeply with literature and literature that reveals, like, the human experience. So I think there is a big question to ask here that I think people don't like to ask, but about how the decisions and choices that we've made around making our curriculum more and more narrow to match with standardized tests has actually done a real disservice to our young people, and whether that's something we should continue to do.
Let's go to the phones here.
Go ahead.
Thanks. 800-423-8255. We have Anima. Anima on the line in Cambridge. Go ahead.
Yes. I am African American and Native American, and I can't tell you how difficult it was for me integrating predominantly white schools and not learning anything about the contributions of Native Americans and African Americans to this country. And especially here in Boston area, there have been so many people who contributed not only to you know, the different legal...
I'm so sorry to interrupt you, Nima, but it feels like where you're going is both contributions and history around indigenous peoples, African Americans in the country, enslaved peoples. Is that where you're going?
Genocide. Well, there was genocide as well, and children need to know this.
Thank you. Thanks, Nima. I'm gonna bring it to Chris now. I appreciate your call, especially you rooting it in your personal experience. And Chris, the bill has something to say about this, which is why I was anxious to bring it back to you.
Yeah, I mean, if you read the entire bill, the bill is a Holocaust and Genocide Education Act, but it also includes those key moments in American history, Native American removal, and westward expansion, as well as slavery. And this goes back to something I was saying earlier about introducing these themes of who has recourse to the law, how do democracies operate, who gets left out of the democratic process, who gets left out of the ideals of citizenship. So you can talk about issues ranging from Native American history to slavery to contemporary issues of immigration. And what I think is nice about the bill, and what I think is opening up for teachers, is that it provides an opportunity to talk about these issues in a more integrated way. And I completely sympathize with anyone who is worried about kind of layering and keep layering the curriculum. But if this bill can do anything, it can really provide an opening very early in a student's career to understand some of these basic concepts, so they'll have a set of concepts and tools when they approach the 20th century and want to talk about explicitly about the Holocaust or about the Cambodian genocide. They'll have a set of a framework of tools, of key terms, of understandings of human behavior and governmental behavior that they'll be able to plug these back into.
Let's get a quick student caller voice, and Maria's on the line in East Boston. Go ahead, Maria.
Hi there. So I went to Arlington High School, actually, and it was 10 years ago now, but I did take my senior year a human genocides class, where we would read books from survivors of genocide and then talk as a class about the impact that has on our society as a whole. And as someone who took this class and found it really valuable, my friends now that I talk to wish that they had a similar class. So I'm absolutely in favor of this legislature passing.
Good to have the testimonial. Thanks, Maria. So Nima, what's the homework assignment? What's the reading assignment? How does a young person begin to engage with this content? How does that learning happen? What's the lesson plan?
Well, it's definitely not one lesson plan. I think, you know, I do think this, we're talking about really deep learning, and I really think literature is a big part of it. So one question I would ask are, what are the books? What are the things that we're going to read together? Like, are we reading Night together? Are we looking at kind of connecting back to what this last caller said? Like, how are we using the testimonies and literature that are connected to these time periods to support our understanding of the human experience. I think that Facing History in Ourselves is a really great organization that's done a lot of work around this. They have a whole Holocaust and human behavior curriculum that they've created that is taught in some schools. But again, it's often an elective that some students take as a junior and senior. I think there are a lot of existing resources that we could turn to and look at and think about how we are going to sort of embed those in students' learning experiences over a very long arc of their education. But it definitely is not the kind of thing where you do a one lesson and be like, check, we talked about the Armenian genocide. If we want it to stick, it needs to be deep. And it needs to be that we're thinking about entire curriculum units that are really centered on understanding these sort of the patterns that we understand around genocide, how it happened, what the impacts are, what the legacies are. We're talking about pretty significant bodies of learning that would need to happen in classrooms.
Nima, these are hard subjects. These are hard. Any trepidation as a teacher, any heart palpitations or sweaty palms about teaching these challenging subjects?
It is really hard, and actually it makes me think back to the caller previously, where I think part of what I was hearing her say is, like, how do we hold the pain in balance with also the joy and contribution?
Nima from Cambridge,
I think we have to do both. Like, I think it's really important if we're going to teach the history of genocide, but we also teach the resistance that existed against each of those genocides, because there was always resistance. And so that's a really important framing that I hope that we're holding, and I hope that in our classrooms that the focus is on, yes, like, here is the atrocity, and also, like, here are all of the people who are standing up in 100 different ways to try to figure out how to stop it. That part is going to be really important. If we don't do that, I think it is a lot of pain. But I think there's a lot for young people to learn in understanding how there have always been people who've resisted, and how that gives us the tools to think about resistance in our own lives.
Following on that, Chris, message to parents who are anxious about turning over teaching of a subject so painful and so intimate, and for some so close to their lived experience, their family's history, over to the classroom teacher. Message to them.
My message to parents is that this is something that is on our students' minds. They see it online. They see it in the news. They hear about it from friends. It is something that is definitely painful to learn about. I think the classroom becomes a place for them to understand it on a deeper level. What is going on? Why these things happen? And one thing whether the students are in college or in high school, the idea of fighting against the idea of inevitability in history. History is the decisions that people make. It is the context that they live in. It is who is the perpetrator, who is the victim, how complicated is the gray zone between those things sometimes. And this type of learning, to me, is such a powerful, because it's emotional, because you're connected to it, because you can put yourself in the place of the victim, or in the place of, in other cases, the perpetrator, or the context that they're in, deciding what you would do and why you would do it. And I think that that type of emotional learning is powerful. It stays with students throughout their years. And I think this would provide teachers a framework in which to do it in a way that is, I think, reasonable, that is controlled, and that there's support there for them. So for parents, I think that's an important message, that this, if teachers are trained well and working with professional development and resources that do it well, there'll be a support system for the teachers and for the students.
All right. Chris Moriello is head of the Center for Holocaust and Genocide Studies at Salem State University. Thanks, Chris.
Thank you.
And Nima Avashia is an 8th grade history and civics teacher in the Boston Public Schools. Nima, good to have you back again. Thank you.
Thank you.